One thing that I know is that at the end of the day, our job with the owners is to take away their excuses, to say, well, I've had so many people through the property. Here's their feedback. The vendor's got every excuse in the world if no one turns up. You have to drive traffic. And the ability to do that and understand that and believe you can influence that is a huge part of how you manage the markets in which we've just emerged from.
You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers, and leaders. Each episode, we bring you the best minds in business and real estate to help you list more, sell more, and elevate your results. To connect with all things Elite Agent, including the latest news, coaching, and features, subscribe at our website, eliteagent.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Elevate Podcast, where we delve into some of the most inspirational minds in business and in real estate for the very best tips and strategies for you to implement to elevate your business. I'm Samantha McLean, editor of Elite Agent and host of this week's show. I'm super excited to bring you this week's guest. Today we are welcoming back to the studio one of my favorite people in the industry. It is a return of the Mac, Mark McLeod. For those of you that don't know him, Mark is the chief of growth for Australia's largest group, Ray White. He has been a regular in Elite Agent for the last 4 and a bit years and is known for his no-nonsense, straight-talking, sensible approach to coaching in the industry. Macca also happens to be one of our most Googled contributors on eliteagent.com as well, and recently we put together an ebook of all of his greatest hits over the last 4 years, which you can download now at eliteagent.com/Mark McLeod. Again, we will leave a link for that in the show notes. While he rarely coaches groups outside Ray White, we've also been lucky enough to have Mark a couple of times as a Transform coach, where the participants have often said to me, wow, you really did save the best till last. And those extended training videos from Macca are part of our Elite Agent Pro membership. So if you'd like to, you can check those out at eliteagent.com/pro. So in this podcast, we're tackling the tricky issue of growth in slower times, which many of the top agents this year have proven is still possible. As Mark says, the only time a slower market should impact your business is if you already have 100% market share, which is a dream for most agents. What we talk through in this podcast is how to grow in a slower market and some of the small but significant things you can do to change your business for the better right now. As always, I'm sure you guys are going to get a lot out of this episode with Mark McLeod, and you're going to want to take notes. If you want to save time and effort in doing that, as usual, we've done the hard work for you. Lots of you are already dialed into Elite Agent Extra, where we aggregate all of the best action tips and tools from all of our podcasts, wrap them up into an easy-to-consume package, and deliver them right to your door in the form of a good old-fashioned, easy-to-read newsletter. So if that sounds like an option you'd like to check out, go to eliteagentelevate.com, and once you've downloaded this week's show notes, hit that big green button to sign up for Extra, and we will send you all this month's good stuff in the mail, as well as giving you access to all of the notes from all of our previous podcast guests, where there are some amazing tips and strategies for you to have a look through. That's it from me for now. On with the show. So welcome back to the podcast, Mark McLeod.
Thanks, Sam. How are you, mate?
I'm going to call this Return of the Mac.
Return of the Mac.
I think that sounds like a good song.
Return of the Mac, yep.
Return of the Mac. So it's good to have you in Sydney. What have you been up to lately?
I've just been traveling around. As you know, we had our Ignite series, which was we do that a number of times of the year in every state. So that's like a traveling roadshow. And we had huge numbers turn out for that, you know, guest speakers. We had Gus Bell-Bonten, as you know. We did a case study, which we explore. So we write the case study. As you know, Sam, we have quite an affinity with Harvard. We have a Harvard professor, Boris, who's just been out in the last month or so. So off that, a year or so ago, Dan decided, you know, that we would use that case study learning. So we've written a number of case studies, and we showcased a case study around the country about the framework for an elite and how one of our people, you know, was a lady from Canberra who came and used all our tools and business grew. And so we case studied that. So we find that a really good way of learning. It's really well accepted by the network and, you know, we reach a lot of people.
Yeah, it's very that Harvard stuff, you know, although Harvard sounds very academic, obviously, but I remember going to one of the Harvard seminars with Professor Groysberg a couple of years ago, and I found it amazing. Like the couple of case studies, like you had to do homework before you got there. But
the case studies have had a huge influence on our network, and certainly me personally. I'm working on a project at the moment which has been kind of based about some of the two or three of the case studies that we've done and how they did certain things in certain companies. So it's a really good learning platform. We invite all our top principals to Boris, as the Professor Busbeck, as you said, and of course Ignite. We then share those learnings through Ignite.
Yeah, amazing. And also at Ignite, Dan White reflected on the 12 months, and Ray White has had a good 12 months.
Yep.
And we've definitely seen that because we kind of report all the offices opening and things like that. But you guys aren't resting on your laurels. And part of the theme of Ignite was, okay, how do we get past what has been a challenging 12 months? So talk me through the thinking of the group.
I think everyone agrees that it has been a challenging 12 months. I think I wrote in my next article for you guys, Churchill saying, which is quite amusing because Sam White shared that with me and I wrote, Sam White wrote that, but Alex Tilbury, our PR guy, said it was an actual Churchillism, you shouldn't waste a good crisis. As a very big company in Australia's terms, and it's certainly one that's been established for well over 100 years, we've seen cycles come and go. My history, this is probably my 30th year, and for many of our young people and many people in the industry, the last couple of years may have been the first time that they've seen or experienced a market like that. So we come from a fairly strong base of understanding what we needed to do. And realistically, Sam, we saw it as a really good opportunity to kind of grab a few points and percentage of market shares nationally, which we did. But in the same token, I think it's important that all our members, all our people, in fact, the industry are able to earn great livings out of this great industry of ours. And there's no question that when it's a bit easier, that certainly is the case. But there were some great opportunities and some great learnings. I think I wrote in the article for you guys, I hope that people took the lessons out of it because the markets will come again. Bad markets will come, good markets will come. It's kind of building that library of experience to know how to adapt. I think probably the biggest thing that I saw was that people were loath to adapt. And I kind of break it down into three groups when the market changed. The first group was those people who constantly asked me when the market's going to go back to where it was.
Denial.
Is it going to come back? Do you think it'll come back in the spring? My answer to that question is I've got no idea. It is what it is. Play the ball in front of you. The second group were ones who I believe were in complete denial. It's not my fault. It's the market. There's nothing I can do. It's completely out of my hands. And the third group were probably the group that we try to be the largest group, the one who saw this as a real opportunity to take away. I've also written in one of the articles for your magazine that market conditions should only affect you if you've got 100% market share. If you've got 20% market share, there's still 8 out of 10 people choosing to list with someone else. That's the opportunity you need to seize upon.
I love that from one of the articles you wrote because I suppose if you do have 100% of the market and the market volumes go down, then obviously your volumes are going to go down.
100%.
But if you only have 20% of the market, then the rest is opportunity.
100%. There is opportunity. I think the opportunity and your ability to seize the opportunity comes from two areas. Your ability to understand process, your ability to have the right mindset. I think the biggest thing that affected many agents was they'd go to an open when the market was hot, particularly down the eastern seaboard, and they'd get 10, 20, 30 people through an open, and all of a sudden they'd go to opens and the numbers just weren't there. Traffic is the first thing to run out of the system, but lack of traffic affects the mindset of agents, and your ability to understand that and manage lack of traffic is a really important platform in navigating through this market.
That was a comment that really resonated with me, actually, is the traffic thing because, we sort of live and breathe traffic all the time.
Yeah.
Like we're trying to get traffic to people's articles and things like that, and it's no different in a real estate sense, really. You have to get people through.
Well, there's two types of traffic in the world that we live in, the world that I talk to our network, and in fact, all of us talk about. We talk about organic traffic, and that's where you sit on your you-know-what and you just wait for people to turn up. The other traffic is what we call driven traffic, and I don't mean driven traffic as in I put everyone in my car. I mean that I've taken a proactive stance to actually get the people to the home. Because one thing that I know is that at the end of the day, our job with the owners is to take away their excuses, to say, well, I've had so many people through the property. Here's their feedback. the vendor's got every excuse in the world if no one turns up. You have to drive traffic. And the ability to do that and understand that and believe you can influence that is a huge part of how you manage the markets in which we've just emerged from. And who knows? I mean, I don't know what's going to happen post-Christmas. You know what I mean? We'll have to wait and see then, you know.
Yeah, January will be an interesting time, January, February, March.
Nearly Melbourne Cup, Sam.
I know. Where has the year gone?
And you know what they say, don't you? That if you haven't lost your weight by Melbourne Cup, give up till Easter. So there's for all those listeners out there, there's only about 7 weeks left.
Yeah. You know? Actually, your sporting analogies in some of your articles are some of the things that I've loved over the last 12 months. So talking about the market in the last 12 months, you said that to picture a football team has been playing on a dry surface for the last few years and then all of a sudden they have a rain, wet, affected pitch to play on. And I thought that was a fantastic analogy because,
it's the same game, same ball, same field, same everything, but you've actually got to adapt your game.
Yeah.
You've got to change your game plan. And I said to one of our officers in the early part, I said, you're playing dry weather football, but you're playing on a bog, you know, and you're getting your ass kicked all the time and you're wondering why. Change your approach.
Yeah.
You know, and I think I try to draw analogies just for people to get that connection between the message that we're trying to get across. And sometimes I work with officers that, particularly in some of our kind of Asian areas, you know, when I'd use a sporting analogy and they just look at me, you know what I mean? So, you know, because they're not into some of the sports that I'm into, you know.
Well, I'm going to give you another one, which is tennis. We talked about, you know, first service, and I've often wondered this watching tennis matches, is they go for broke on that first serve, most of the times miss it, and then...
I understand why they do that. I have this side, and I think that article there, I talked about a couple of things. I talked about, you know, every time I see a professional tennis player, I'm like, mate, you've been serving since you were four, mate. You're getting paid a gazillion dollars a year. Just get the first serve in. You would think that. And the other part of that I wrote, I think, in that article about, I saw this wonderful post on social media, which made me laugh, that the cars in the Fast and Furious still haven't stopped for fuel yet. You know? And I think that.
In nine movies.
Yeah. You know, and I think that I went on to say that in every market, for someone whose business is failing, there's someone else's business who's growing.
Mm.
And what's the difference? Same environment. In fact, I have a saying which I don't know if I wrote it in the next article. I might have kept it up my sleeve. Was that this is a sad but a truism, is that there's a logical path that turns into an illogical outcome. And let me explain what I mean by that. If I'm an agent who's been in the industry for 5 or 10 years, I have more past clients. I've done more opens. I've got more connections in my community. I probably have better market knowledge than someone. But if you look at that collection of people 5 to 10 years, the majority of them, their businesses are flatlining or in some cases declining. The logical path about that would be their business shouldn't be growing as they create momentum off those things I talk about. But the illogical outcome is those businesses aren't going anywhere. And I think, I believe strongly that the one thing, and, you know, you've had some great agents in here. I saw your podcast with Gab just recently and many other good agents that you talk to. You know, whether it's the best agents in this country, and we all know them, they don't have any more time than someone writing 200 grand a year. Agents need to understand that time is the currency in which you deal in. It's your currency. And so how well you use that time will determine the success of your business. If you allow your days on markets and you allow your clearance rates to drop, it actually takes time out of your bucket to manage that, and it affects your business dramatically. You know, we've, over the last 18 months or 2 years in Australia, have really focused on controlling days on markets, controlling clearance rates, which then control two things, controls energy and it controls your ability or your time in a proactive way. And, you know, they've been really strong focuses of our Ignite programs, of our case studies through the last couple of years.
And you can definitely see that in the way that the network has still grown even over the last 12 months, which is amazing. And I think the point that you make there is really interesting, in that one serve served well, like, you know, whether it's with a buyer or a seller or something like that, like spending that extra time to get to know them is always going to be better time management than getting your first serve out and then going back again.
Yeah, it's an interesting analogy, the way that I use that. I use that in a kind of couple of senses, certainly the way that you referred to then. It was also the fact that I'm curious. I'm curious why two people in the same environment, one does really well, one doesn't do well. one's business is growing while other business is declining. That was the curious comment about that statement. It's interesting that, as I said earlier, that mindset has had such a big effect on the way that agents have turned up in the last period of time. There's some fundamental understanding of that. I think that, as you know, I've discussed this in the past. I think there's a lot of training in this country from real estate coaches, both internal inside networks and external, about scripts and dialogues. The one thing that scripts and dialogues don't do is that they don't get people understanding. They don't get people to think about what is the outcome from this interaction. I'm just going to deliver this rote, learnt bit of information. I think that also the great growth from a real estate business comes from great structure and process. Mm. I have a saying that if you can swim in 1 foot of water, you can swim 100 foot of water. If you can sell 10 homes, you can sell 100 homes. But the ability to sell a home and the ability to build a real estate business are unrelated. And I think one of the problems that we have at the moment is that many people think they're one and the same things. They are not one and the same things.
So just because you can sell a lot of homes, and it's funny, I was talking to Gavin about this, yeah. You know, like he was quite adamant that even though he'd stepped into leadership, which is fantastic for him, that his team and his structure and his systems and processes, he'd already built those. So that would remain the same.
Yep. And, you know, the ability to manage capacity. Interesting is that each agent in this country does have what I know to be a personal capacity. No matter how good you are on your own, and I'm on record as saying that I think the future of the single entity agent is going to be challenged over the next couple of years. The expectations of the consumer and the expectations for one individual in a silo application to deliver that type of service across, you know, stock management, databasing, future clients, past clients, all that type of stuff, I think the ask on the single entity agent is just too much. Hmm. And I think businesses will have to restructure and individuals will have to restructure to meet the demands of the future.
There was another great article of yours, Begin With The End In Mind, and it also dealt with some of the conditions that we've seen in the last 12 months, which is there's a lot of agents out there that for the first time in their lives have had to ask for a price reduction.
Yep.
And you have some very definite views on that.
Yep. There's no question that's probably the most challenging part of our role. It's a pretty easy gig when an owner wants $1 million and you rock up to auction day or rock up with an offer that's 100 grand more than what they want.
Yeah.
It's a lot more challenging when you rock up with an offer of 100 grand less than what they want.
Yeah.
And I think in that space there, that is a huge challenge for most agents. You know, I think in the article I wrote about that at the cornerstone of great education is actually empathy. And many people are surprised at that because I think over the years, the industry is taught that this is the fire and brimstone of our industry. In fact, my experience and the great people that I work in our company who are extraordinarily talented at this build a platform of empathy. They build a platform of transparency. They build a platform of just detailed information, you know. My belief is that every owner will make the correct decision when provided with the correct information. What we see is not enough correct information being delivered to the consumer in a very professional manner. I think what gets delivered a lot is, this is what I think, Mr. Vendor, you know, as opposed to, you know, my job is to bring the market. And there's a lot of talk about that. But you can see the disconnect between the fear, and I say to our people, you should not be fearful of delivering the truth to an owner.
The trouble is, like, I think it's human nature to not want to deliver bad news and not want to have people not like us. But bad news is better than no news, right?
And we've come from 5 years of, or even longer, of every bit of information, or every bit of news that we provided, by and large, was pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, pretty good for most property owners in Australia. I'll give a shout out to our cousins in Western Australia, probably haven't had the same type of joy that the East Coast has had.
They're waiting for their turn.
And now, you know, they've been waiting patiently in the West. I was in Western Australia last week, you know. But, you know, we have a number of our performers in Western Australia who had their best years ever last year, you know, and they just have adapted well, followed the process, taken points of market share to increase their business, you know. So I think inside of that, you know, there's every opportunity. But back to the original point, we've been delivering good news for quite a while.
Yeah. You
know? And I believe strongly in a couple of points here. You know, every person who came to the market in the last 12 months came with eyes fully wide open. Like, you didn't have to be a Rhodes Scholar to work out that the markets weren't flash. There was enough media about it.
There was enough.
I used to say to our people all the time, you know, you do have to acknowledge that these people are watching the same news stories. They're getting the same social feeds. They're actually reading the same Fin Review. They're not devoid of this information. They've come to the market because they have a genuine need to sell the property. Your job is to provide them with sufficient information so they can make an educated decision. And I think, you know, there's a lot, without me going into too much detail of technique and how we do that, I think, you know, there was a skill set that hopefully many of our people learned and developed further in the last 12 months. You know, we started to see, you know, our performance was by and large reasonably solid, but we started to see some really good performances even pre-election, you know, as people started to get their heads around what their role, you know, was about as the market became more challenging or remained challenging, I should say.
Yeah. Just to join a couple of dots there, that some of the points that you've just made is that, number one, okay, so in a changing market, your core skill is empathy with your vendors.
Well, I think empathy is the vehicle in which you deliver the information.
Yeah.
It's more of a vehicle. Like, I say to our people all the time, you know, understand this information can be life-shattering for some of these people. And I said, you need to understand what we're doing here. For most people that we deal with, not everyone, but a huge majority, this house that we're selling or apartment, whatever it may be, is their most valuable asset. They have that, the sale of that, attached to some dream. Now, whether that dream is to reduce debt, whether that dream is to downsize and upsize, whether that dream is to sell the home in Sydney and go and buy a beachfront unit down the coast or up the coast, it's attached to a dream.
Mm.
It's attached to a thought. And what you're doing, or what we're doing by coming along and saying, well, you're not going to get your 1.2, you're only going to get one, we're actually affecting this dream. And I think great agents are really empathetic and understand that. And if you can deliver it in a way that speaks to that, and you can use empathy as your vehicle, and the owner genuinely gets that you are empathetic and doing your best, I think you arrive at a place where business gets done far quicker than, you know, fire and brimstone.
Yeah, absolutely. What if the vendor's on the journey with you, but it's just things aren't moving? What do you suggest to agents to reinvigorate interest in a particular?
There's a couple of things that we know from the research that we do. And as you know, we have access to, we have more people. We have more access to more data.
And more
information.
Yeah.
Days on markets is a hugely critical thing. When days on markets hit a peak number, and that number sits somewhere between 40 and 50, a couple of things occur. Normally by that stage, the agent is starting to lose some energy towards that piece of stock.
Yep.
You probably see at that point in time where inquiry from portal starts to drop away.
Yep.
Where this is a really interesting piece, and I'm always fascinated by this piece. So at roughly day 60, your chance of getting paid as the original listing agent starts to drop away.
All right. Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
But interesting, coincide at the same time, the percentage chance of the next agent that sells it increases incrementally the other way.
Mm.
So all your listeners out there, they'll know that nearly everyone would have picked up a piece of stock that had been listed with another agent.
Yeah.
And the majority of that stock gets sold. And that's sold for a couple of reasons. Let me explain that to you. Well, I think, you know, I haven't got the mortgage on being correct here. You know what I mean? I've just been in a lot and tried to figure it out. I think what happens, the energy of the agent changes because the vendor changing agent, the vendor is contextually saying to the next agent, I want this thing sold.
Mm-hmm.
And if they didn't want it sold, they would have withdrew from the market rather than withdrawing from the agent. And so there's two types of withdrawals, which most people don't think about. There's withdrawals from the market where the service has been so good where the vendor goes, I'm withdrawing this from the market because I believe nothing else could have been done.
Yep.
Withdrawing from agent or withdrawing from agency to another one is a different kettle of fish altogether, because what the vendor's saying by that withdrawal, I'm withdrawing from you because I don't think you did your task well.
I don't trust you.
Don't trust you. You didn't deliver. And how that trust turns up in, there's two parts, how the trust turns up in the relationship part and how the trust turns up inside the transaction. I ask people fundamentally, if you're selling your home today, how would you gauge trust of that agent in the way they're processing? You'd want to see traffic. Mm. You know, everyone out goes in, you need to list with me. I've got the best database. I've got the best access, yada, yada, the best marketing. And all of a sudden they list with you and no traffic turns up. They go, well, hang on a minute.
Yeah.
The vendor would want to be able to know that you can consummate or you can have the ability to put a deal together. So offers to the owner are critical. Like, if you can't get offers, then what are you doing with these people?
Even if they're terrible offers?
It's interesting, you know, when we pick up a lot of other agent stock in the past, nearly unanimously those owners would say to us, you know, I was with that agent for 90 days and they couldn't generate me one offer. In fact, Sam, they couldn't even generate me a rude offer. What the vendor's saying, I don't believe that agent had the ability to actually even conclude a sale. So the blame was squarely on the shoulders of the agent rather than the vendor taking responsibility for where their prime home might be priced on the market. And so what happens there is that if you look at the clearance rate of the second agent in, it's very, very high. But from day 45 of the existing agent, their chance of getting paid drops away, but the chance of the next agent who picks it up incrementally rises the other way. It's one of the I did a whole body of work on that this year through our network and outside of our network as we monitored other stock. It's a fascinating piece of work. It comes down to one thing, mindset.
Wow.
Complete mindset. The original agent's gone, I don't think I can sell this. The second agent knows that clearance rates of second agent in is high. Their mindset is, I've got a piece of stock I think I can sell. It's mindset.
That's interesting because, you know, I can see how energy would drop away, and particularly if you've got another new listing over here which is getting a bit of attention, then all of a sudden.
And to another point of that, we, as you know, we do a lot of stuff. We surveyed the whole industry, not just our people, but we surveyed the whole industry. And we looked at how quickly people respond to inquiry and all that type of stuff through emails. And, as you know, we did a big, I think I've shared that with you in the past, you know. It was interesting that how much lower response to inquiries from homes that have been on the market for 40 days, 45 days or more, as opposed to the home been on the market for 1 or 2 days. Speed of response between those two is absolutely the discerning difference between those two.
Yeah. Is there a way to rescue it?
So we have a whole recycling program.
Yep.
Where we recycle stock, you know, part of the process is we are recycling stock in ways.
Get a fresh pair of eyes in or?
Heaps of stuff. There's heaps of ways that we've done that, you know, and it's worked very, very well for us of recycling the stock back inside our network. And I think that's been a huge learning for many people.
Yeah.
And once again, data has enabled us to be able to look at that in ways that we give our people really solid information to make better decisions about how they're operating in the field, you know. And you know, we've got a whole data analysis that we have inside the network has really been helpful through this last 12 months to give our people the facts. You know, look at this, you know, your chance of getting paid on this is this. If you go and recycle this, your chance goes back up to here. Let's talk about how you're going to do that now.
Yeah, well, that's a great tip for everyone that might be carrying a few listings. As someone said to me once, the highest price never comes on day 90.
Yeah. Yes, no, that's all in the majority of the cases.
Yeah.
In the majority of the cases.
Yeah. Absolutely, unless something else happens. So we are coming up to our technology issue, which I know is a bit of a passion of yours as well. And a couple of issues ago, you did talk about the office of the future.
Yeah.
So what do you feel the real estate office of, say, 2025 is going to look like?
I think there's been a lot of talk about technology and the technology is going to disrupt our industry. I'm not smart enough to know whether it's going to or it's not going to. But what I believe, Sam, and I've been to like, I don't know how many Inmans in a row now, I know you go to a number of as well, is that the one thing that remains at the central part of all talks at tech conferences about the relationship between humans remains at the core.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that technology will change the way that we go about doing business in respect to pushing us, the human factor, closer to that core need. I think that if you look at the industry, I think what technology has to do and was very strong in the last Inman. Were you at the last Inman?
I wasn't actually. Yeah. I think the Vegas.
Yeah. The last Inman was very strong about technology, just basically providing a platform of tasks through workflows, through AI and ML, to get the agent closer to that relationship more often. And I think traditional roles inside businesses are going to be challenged by that. Who actually does what now inside the relationship? I believe that the agent themselves should be working in some key areas. You know, should be working in more face-to-face appraisals and listing presentations, you know, negotiating contracts, vendor management, and kind of future pipeline. And if you can use technology to use that currency which you have as time to work in those four areas more often, your business is going to grow. There's no question about that. So I think technology is going to play that particular role. Big thing coming out of the States in last was the iBuyer kind of phenomenon, which is much stronger in some states in America, in other states, which is interesting. These are people who are just, you know, not even looking at homes, putting homes on, you know, without agent interaction. It's still relatively small in size of scale of the American market, but I do think that that's probably an area that we need to keep an eye on.
Do you think we'll see iBuyers here?
Inevitably, I would think. I mean, I can't see why not. You know, whether our algorithms around pricing homes through that sense is still good enough for an owner to feel confident without the human, I'm not quite sure. But I think inevitably someone's going to put their foot in the water in that space.
Yeah. There's a lot of fractional type buying models cropping up in Australia, I've noticed. Yep. Do you see any of them taking hold?
I think, like anything, our attitude towards that is to keep an eye on everything and monitor and be aware and not be hubris about the role. I think as an industry, you know, I think humility can be our greatest asset in the way we view these new things coming in, you know.
Yeah.
There is the way the world's changing and the way that we do things and how we live our lives now and the technology that we have and all that type of stuff. You know, I was in a mate's Tesla this morning, you know, and just about driverless and all that stuff that was unimaginable for us 5 or 10 years ago. Mm. So I have a very open mind that anything is possible, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, they put a man on the moon many years ago, apparently, you know, so.
They haven't done it again, though, have they?
That's interesting, that, isn't it?
Yeah, it might have just been. Well, it's funny, isn't it, that they decided they put a man on the moon because they wanted to see if they could, but nobody's ever done it again, I don't think.
Well, I'm not quite sure why you go back. There's no fast food stores. There's no vineyards. There's no good restaurants. So I'm not quite sure what the attraction is, you know.
Do you think there's a parallel there with some technology that we're seeing, you know, at the moment, is that it's a good thing to have but doesn't necessarily improve things?
For me, it gets back to, is this technology going to give you more control over your currency, which is time, to get face-to-face and build better relationships? And maybe I'm off marquee, Sam. As I said, you know, having insecurities about the future and what I know and what I don't know.
Yeah.
But I think everyone understands this is a relationship business. I say to our people, is this a relationship business? Yes, it is. Does everyone agree? And everyone wholeheartedly goes, yes, it is. And then I say, pick up your pen. I want you to write down all the people you have a relationship with that you've never spoken to.
How do they go with that?
Well, then they don't write anything down.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so some of the younger guys, and I'm not sure about this, I have a relationship with someone on Facebook, or I'll have a relationship with someone on the gram, you know, and on Insta, you know. I do a bit of podcasting on Instagram and all that type of stuff, but I'm not quite sure I have a relationship with people.
Mm.
Like, there's people that I follow on Instagram. I'm a huge fan of surfing, so I follow all the pro surfing tour on Instagram. But do I have a relationship with Kelly Slater? Do I have a relationship with Mick Fanning? Do I have a relationship with John Florence? The answer to that question is no, I don't. But I'm an avid follower of them on social media.
It's got to be two-way, though. Even you and I sitting opposite each other, we wouldn't have built a relationship, I don't think, if we hadn't have met each other face-to-face at Inman.
Well, we've met each other a number of times. Yeah. You know, we caught up in Inman, must have been 4 or 5 years ago, and we've done a little bit of work since then, you know what I mean? But, you know, I think at the end of the day, I certainly don't have a relationship with anybody I've never spoken to.
Yeah.
And it's a really good core messaging that I say to everyone. I think I try to work with people to build ecosystems. There's not one thing in isolation, I believe, plays a role. Even if I'm talking to you and I have a relationship through speaking, and it's a real estate relationship, you still want to be able to have some visuals on me that I'm successful in the marketplace. So if I haven't got sold boards up with sold stickers on, that may damage that relationship. It's the ecosystem that you build around you, where every part of the ecosystem. In fact, I tell a funny story. Many years ago, I was driving to the airport, which is fairly regular for me, as you know, and I saw this ad for men's underwear. And I forget the ad, but I remember the sequence. And it was quite amusing, like something referring to the house for your whatever it may be, men's underwear. You can imagine it was quite one of those catchy, you know. And I can remember seeing it on a billboard, and I caught my eye and I smiled. I was on the phone driving to the airport. And then about a week later, I saw another billboard in Sydney with the same ad. And then I was flicking through a magazine one day, and I saw the same ad again. I went home. I was on Facebook one night, and all of a sudden, the ad came up down the side of Facebook. And then I hardly watched television, but I was watching television one night, and the ad came on. And then I found myself a couple of weeks later in Myers, of all places, with Kel, and I bought the brand of underwear. One of those things in isolation would not have got me. It was the fact that they built an ecosystem around my senses that made me. If the only place I saw that was on the one billboard on the way to the Brisbane airport, I can guarantee you I would not have bought that underwear.
Yeah.
It's the fact that if you want to build a successful real estate business, you have to understand the power of the ecosystem as opposed to I'm going to make my fortunes off the back of the gram. Well, I doubt that.
Yeah.
I'm going to make my fortune through Facebook. Do I think social media has a role to play? You'd be delusional to think that it doesn't. But do good signage in your suburb play a role? Yes, it does. Does quality communication in your suburb play a role? Does the way that you turn up at open for inspections, the way that you follow up from open for inspections, you know, the way that you conduct yourself with your client, the way you conduct yourself with your past clients, each one of these is the spoke of the wheel of your ecosystem. And if you want to build a successful real estate business, build an ecosystem.
Mm. These days, if you don't have the ecosystem around, it's classic, you know, what did they used to say back in Don Draper's time, you know, 13 touches or something or other would get you a sale. And it's no different. It's just that you've got to remember the offline and the online and the in-person and get it all right and be consistent.
At the risk of saying, you know, Tommy and the boys from News Limited out there, I still believe it or not, that newsprint plays a role as my ecosystem.
We're still here.
You know, and 100%, Sam.
Yeah.
And I said to one of our young guys the other day, he said, I don't read the newspaper. And I said, go down to your local coffee shop on Saturday morning, take a photograph of A, what everyone's doing on a Saturday morning at the coffee shop. There was a combination of looking at phones and reading newspapers.
Mm.
And B, have a look at the age of the people that you're reading newspapers, which was about our age, Sam.
Yep.
And then ask yourself the age of the people who own your homes in your suburb, which was the people reading the newspapers. Now, once again, I think newspaper or print is a part of an ecosystem. In isolation, I think it forms part of some of our very best agents who have other parts of the ecosystem well and truly in play.
Yep.
It plays a significant role for these people.
I do too. I think you leave newspapers out, even if you're in a younger demographic, mum and dad might be flicking through the newspaper and say, oh, hey, there's a property I thought was amazing. Why don't you go take a look at it? And there you go. That's not digital at all.
Yep.
That's just playing your spheres of influence.
Yep. You know, but I think, you know, one of the things for us is, you know, with the development of our concierge business, I know you've spoken to Kelly in the past who runs that. You know, it's just another spoke in that ecosystem wheel. And what it does is a number of things. It actually is very consistent in the way that it communicates to our databases, but it also puts the currency. It allows the agents to outsource the calls, but also gives them time back into their world to actually use that time, which is the currency, to refocus and reshape their business.
I think you're speaking of concierge. I mean, that's something that's been going for quite some time now for you guys, and it's something that other people are only just starting to think about now. So, you know, that does put you in an interesting position for the next however long, thinking that that's already set up.
Our concierge business is growing a great speech. I do have to say that we all know that Kelly's my life partner, you know what I mean? So if you're listening, Kel, I'm giving you a rap.
Yeah. Yeah,
but on a serious note, it is a serious part of our business now. You know, we have many of our top businesses, many of our top people who use concierge on an extraordinarily regular basis now. It's a growing, we've got a very large centre, you know, in Spring Hill in Brisbane, just off the city fringe there. It's growing rapidly, you know, because it puts time back in. It puts efficiency. It's consistent. I say to people all the time, what it does is on time all the time, every time. And it puts a consistency of communication back into your business, but it actually puts time back into your business to be used in those kind of four earlier areas that I spoke about.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've talked about a heap of things again today in some of the great articles that you've had in Elite Agent over the last 6 months. So, you know, as always, I just want to thank you for sharing your knowledge and your time with our readers.
Well, thank you. That's right. It comes around really quickly and I go, God almighty, I've got to write another one. But the benefit of that, I don't know if anyone out there follows Seth Godin, you know, he's a great writer.
Yeah.
And when you're forced to do something with regularity, it amazes how what writing the articles for you do, Sam, is make me stop and think. And there's a good part of that for me, even though, as I said to you, I go, oh, shit, I've got to write an article again.
Yep.
It does make me stop, think, and reflect and kind of get some stuff out of my head in on paper, which I can use in the way we talk to our people. So there's some value for me as well. So.
Yeah. Well, I know everyone loves reading your musings. If there's one thing that you could leave people with as a result of listening to this podcast or, you know, one thought that you could leave people with going into the next 12 months, what would that be?
I ask a question of people all the time. This is a great question, I think. I think it's a really simple question. I believe in simplicity. And it's a great time of the year as we head towards the end of the year. As I said, you know, Melbourne Cup, Easter, we've got a period coming up there. You know, we've got to navigate. I say to people all the time, tell me why your business would grow next year. Tell me genuinely why it would grow. And many people can't answer that question. And there's this reliance on my business will be better when the market's better. And I don't think that's an answer that has any great future to it in the way you are as an agent. The only way that I believe your business can grow is two ways, is that you expand the hours that you have by building a team around you, or you're preparing your business to get a team around you. You know, and if you haven't got a team out there, then you will reach personal capacity. And personal capacity, your personal capacity, Sam, might be 400K a year. My personal capacity might be 300K a year. Billy's personal capacity might be 450. There is a number not too much higher than 500 or 600 where personal capacity starts to peak out. And so you should be asking yourself, you know, well, the best advice that I can give someone is, okay, how can I expand my hours next year by building a team, and what role will the team play? Or secondly, how can I start to prepare my business to get a PA? And I'll just finish with that. How your business is shaped today, there's a reason why many people don't put a PA on. Is that because they haven't got the confidence to perform at enough level to pay? And oftentimes it's the way they've built their business. There's two types of business in my world. There's what we call an opportunistic style business, where there's no structure, there's no process. You rely upon something to occur. So a good question to ask all your listeners, I don't know when you're going to put this podcast up, is think about in 3 months' time and write down all the stock you're going to list in 3 months' time. Now, if you can't write any, then you've got to wait for something to occur. You've got to wait for someone to walk through an open. You've got to wait for someone to buy a house that has a house to sell. You've got to rely upon something outside of your control to occur. That's an opportunistic business. If you're creating an opportunistic business today, you very rarely put a PA on because you haven't got the confidence to spend the dough. You have two good months, one bad month, two good months, one bad month, one bad, one good. And that lack of consistency in your performance gives you a resistance to putting PAs on, which then you can't expend your time, so your business becomes plateaued. The other way is you build a core business where you build databasing process, where you can see a steady flow of people coming from your database into your pipeline. What that type of business does is give you confidence. And off the back of that confidence, you start to employ people. I would leave them with A, why would your business grow? Ask yourself the question, what type of business have you built? And see, you know, do I have the confidence to expand the hours I have? That would be the three things I would ask.
I think that's a great question for everyone to ask themselves. Yep. Mark McLeod, thank you so much.
All right, Sam. Good being here.
To connect with all things Elite Agent, including the latest news, coaching and features, subscribe at our website, eliteagent.com.